Good morning, everybody. This is Turning Towards Life with Justin and Lizzie. It's 9 o'clock on Sunday morning. This is episode 60 of the Turning Towards Life project that is a Third Space thing. If you want to know anything more about Third Space, you can check us out, thirdspacecoaching.com. And you can also see all of the things we've ever made on turningtowards.life. And we also have a YouTube channel. I just thought I would do that as a summary in case anybody here is new. We've had some new people come in the last few weeks. And we're very, very happy to have you here. And to be able to say that we've got loads of episodes on offer that you can look at the titles and see what's interesting and click and have a listen to any of them. It's very exciting that that's even possible. So we began this whole thing with a kind of, let's just do something. And have it to be minimally viable, as it were. And given that that's how we began, and to know we've done 60 things, our 60th time, it's quite an extraordinary thing to take stock of and realise what we've actually done. So I'm in this moment very appreciative of that and want to extend a very, very warm welcome to anybody who's listening to this, either live or when it gets put somewhere that you can listen to later as well. So a very warm welcome to anybody who's here for the first time, and welcome back if this is your regular thing or if you listen every now and again. We're very, very happy to be here.
Thank you, Lizzie. That was such a warm welcome. And I'm feeling very glad for everyone who takes part in this, and welcome to all of the people who've joined our private members-only Facebook group this week, which is how you can watch live. So welcome to all of you as well. And before we dive into the source for this week, I was saying to Lizzie just now that I'm feeling very playful and laughing at myself this morning, because I've been doing a large piece of very intense work last week, and found out this morning that one big piece of it I was doing in entirely the wrong way, which means I have to do it again. And I'm quite used to treating myself as if I'm a terrible kind of something when this happens, and feeling very afraid and very overwhelmed. And this morning, somehow I'm managing to treat myself like a source of my own delighted amusement, like, oh, look at me, there I go, just like other human beings, making big mistakes and then having to work with them. So I feel my own playfulness here, which is also very closely connected with this source that we're going to read this morning. So I'm going to turn to that. So for anyone who is, if you're joining us for the first time, all of the sources are always on turningtowards.life. So if you want to read along with us, or read after us, or see from where these source texts that we always bring into the conversation are coming from, that's the place to go. And this one is from the second of a pair of books that I'm in the middle of reading at the moment, which are by Matt Haig, who I think I got brought to my attention by a very good friend of ours some time ago. He's a novelist, but he's also, in alongside this, doing this amazing work of writing in a very straightforward and generous way about how the world in which we live these days deeply, deeply affects us, and the kinds of difficulty we can get into because of that. So his first book is called Reasons to Stay Alive, and the second book, which this is from, is called Notes on a Nervous Planet. And it's called How to Be Happy. So here we go. It has two parts, How to Be Happy and How to Be Happy 2. How to Be Happy. 1. Do not compare yourself to other people. 2. Do not compare yourself to other people. 3. Do not compare yourself to other people. 4. Do not compare yourself to other people. 5. Do not compare yourself to other people. 6. Do not compare yourself to other people. 7. Do not compare yourself to other people. How to Be Happy Part 2. don't compare your actual self to a hypothetical self. Don't drown in a sea of what ifs. Don't clutter your mind by imagining other versions of you in parallel universes where you made different decisions. The internet age encourages choice and comparison, but don't do this to yourself. Comparison is the thief of joy, said Theodore Roosevelt. You are you. The past is the past. The only way to make a better life is from inside the present. To focus on regret does nothing but turn that very present into another thing you will wish you did differently. Accept your own reality. Be human enough to make mistakes. Be human enough not to dread the future. Be human enough to be, well, enough. Accepting where you are in life makes it so much easier to be happy for other people without feeling terrible about yourself.
So here we go. How to Be Happy by Matt Haig. Number one, do not compare yourself to other people. Number two, do not compare yourself to other people. Number three, do not compare yourself to other people. Number four, do not compare yourself to other people. Number five, do not compare yourself to other people. Number six, do not compare yourself to other people. Number seven, do not compare yourself to other people. How to Be Happy, Part Two. Don't compare your actual self to a hypothetical self. Don't drown in a sea of what ifs. Don't clutter your mind by imagining other versions of you in parallel universes where you made different decisions. The internet age encourages choice and comparison, but don't do this to yourself. Comparison is the thief of joy, said Theodore Roosevelt. You are you. The past is the past. The only way to make a better life is from inside the present. To focus on regret does nothing but turn that very present into another thing you will wish you did differently. Accept your own reality. Be human enough to make mistakes. Be human enough not to dread the future. Be human enough to be, well, enough. Accepting where you are in life makes it so much easier to be happy for other people without feeling terrible about yourself.
I think this is so astonishing. And I want to just briefly appreciate the way that Matt Haig writes in super straightforward language. This is true of all of his writing that I've come across, is that he manages to do something very important and very powerful without making it sound far away or like you have to be sort of esoteric, philosophical master or something. That's right. And I picked this one, Lizzie, because, oh my goodness, this gets me so often. I have to work so hard not to have this be the frame, all of it, actually. And there are parts of it that particularly move me. But, you know, I was listening to, I'll tell you this story. This week, Michelle Obama's biography has been on the radio. And I was driving somewhere and I was driving to go and have a swim and I turned it on and I listened to her and it's wonderful and amazing. And I could feel the part inside me as she was talking about the time when she met for the first time the man who was going to marry and all of everything that the life was going to bring because of that. I could feel the part of me that goes, well, why wasn't I like her then? And why wasn't I like him then? And how come my life didn't turn out the way theirs did? And how come I'm not president of the United States? Literally. Which is completely impossible. I'm not even a citizen of the United States, let alone. Why didn't I study law? Why didn't... And so not only was that going on, but then... I know, it's funny, isn't it? But then there's shame coming up. And then the next thing that happens is I'm in the shame and fear of it, not in the, I mean, you can hear how crazy the thoughts are, but that part's gone very quickly. And then I'm driving along feeling some level of awfulness about how come my life is this way and not that way. And once that the moment of comparison actually was very brief, and you know, as I say it to you, it's obvious how ridiculous it is, and yet there I am driving on my way to my swimming with this deep feeling of something's wrong and I don't even know what it is, and it was my fault that it's wrong in this way, and I all of that. And then last part is I am so moved. I just want to connect to the last line that he says. He says, you know, when we start to accept ourselves and our own lives, we can be much more generous to other people regardless of their situation without comparing. And so once I've got into this narrative of somewhere along the line, I made a terrible mistake, didn't choose to live the life of the Obamas, apparently. So now I'm so small and worthless and blah, 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 blah. Then, of course, anybody else who comes into my path where there's something wonderful going on, the part of me that is ashamed finds it very, very difficult to be in contact with, in a loving way, with their goodness and just revel in whatever it is that's going on in their lives, because it's already in a comparison, like, oh, here's another example. So it's so interesting to see how all of this dynamic is, it's not only clearly a dynamic which has me, I suspect many people, because he's writing about it, sort of like at a remove from life and not being in life as it is, but always in comparison. It's also so hard to be in generous, open, receptive contact with anything from there.
So the thing I'm laughing at, Justin, is the line, why aren't I the president of the United States?
I know.
For some reason, I'm worried that that's not going to start making me laugh this whole thing. Oh, God. And I totally get it as well. Like, I know the part of me that, you know, I'll take something small and then I'll take it to, like, the nth degree. And I even have, like, these ridiculous fantasies of, like, well, if I met Brad Pitt at the park gates, this is what I would say to him, kind of thing. And, like, I don't even, you know, sometimes I don't even know the tiny thought that came from. But, you know, I have this capacity to kind of fantasize and catastrophize and take myself down. So, you know, like, you took yourself so far down the road. I know that part of myself, and I can be kind of wandering along daydreaming of a scenario the likelihood of it happening is zero, and yet there's some, you know, there's some kind of longing or some kind of something to be clearly somewhere else and in a different life as well. You know, I think what I appreciate about this is the first bit of just the discipline of those seven times being told, because I think this is maybe one of the kind of the shadows of compassion, in that we relate into other people's lives very naturally as human beings. We listen to Michelle Obama and we stand in her shoes for a second. And in that second, it's really beautiful. We can connect. We can imagine someone else's life. Like, what a beautiful thing. And then the distortion comes of, well, I'm not like that, and therefore I'm an idiot, or I'm unsuccessful, or I'm stupid, or I'm less than, or something. But something really beautiful, which is empathy, turns into comparison. And the discipline then comes with, how can I be with the beautifulness of Michelle Obama's life and not start beating myself up with her life and doing all this stuff that we do to ourselves? And I think it's really does feel like a discipline to me. I don't think it's a one-step wonder. I don't think you can just say this to yourself and then that's it. It's like living this every day and allowing it to be integrated and embodied in catching ourselves and observing ourselves and learning what it means to be present and to be in receipt of this life that's our life, and dignifying it by being in it, rather than belittling it by trying to be somewhere else or wanting something different. And that's a tricky deal. It really, really is. And we've got so many things going on that take us out and take us away. Like he talks about the internet and this whole choice and comparison thing. It's appealing to us all the time. It's appealing to our lower nature, if you like. The part of us that's frightened gets sucked into advertising campaigns and all these different things that are going on in the media and marketing and the news and the way people talk about other people. And so we have to find it, our own discipline around it, I think, our own wish to stay in this life and be in this life and let things be the way they are and find our joy. And the joy that can be found is in our own being and in our own gratitude and in our own life. And it's hard. And I really also appreciate Matt Haig's direct language and simplicity. And I was doing something in the last 2 days of last week, and there was a saying, and I can't remember who, this is so typical me not being able to remember who said the quote, but they were saying, any old fool can make something complicated. It takes a genius to make something simple. And this is what this feels like to me, is that he has distilled, from having read some of his work, I understand that he has, like all of us, a very complex inner world and a very big imagination. And so the kind of talent that it is to simplify something down, I really appreciate that. And it really gets to the heart of things and speaks to our experience so beautifully and is very direct with us. Don't clutter your mind by imagining other versions of you in a parallel universe. But, oh, okay. I won't do that then for this second and see. So it's a kind of, feels like it's cutting off all the things that prevent us in a moment from being present and being very clear about that. And I feel really, really grateful for the invitation to accept this reality and dignify this place, this body, this set of relationships, this reality. And as I say it, I can feel this experience of lightness arrive, because I feel powerful there. I can enjoy my life from my life, but I can't enjoy my life from a different position that's not here. I can't enjoy my life from the future that I've imagined. I can't enjoy my life from standing and regretting in the past, regrets, like he's saying. So I feel like it's an invitation to powerful reception and appreciation, and being somewhere fully gives us the gift that it's supposed to be giving us. Like, it's there. It doesn't, the present moment, the nowness of life doesn't go anywhere. It's always, always benevolent, always saying, well, if you come back, I'm here. It's always on offer. It doesn't disappear because we neglect it, or we mess with it, or we ignore it, or we're totally on another planet, or out to lunch, as some of my Enneagram teachers used to say to me. The Enneagram is a personality model that I've studied, and some of my teachers were very straight with us about when our personalities rather than our true selves are in the driving seat, and they would call it being out to lunch when we're kind of in denial about the fact that we are doing this. Because it's also possible to be in denial about the fact that we're out to lunch and to be clean with ourselves, just like Matt Haig's trying to be clean with us here. I think it's really important to be able to do this, and for this safe space to be made that we can admit that we do this is really important. Because it's also, as you say, it's really shameful to go, oh God, yeah, I wander around wanting other things that people have that I haven't got, or comparing my house to someone else's house, or the fact that my life is like this and theirs is like that. And actually, there's so much on offer right here. And that's the gift I'm receiving in this moment from this. Really, really beautiful.
Yeah, you speak about it very beautifully as well, Lizzie. One of the things that came to me whilst you were talking was what an invitation this is to practice. You know, something we've talked about a lot and something I know is very important in the work that we do and what we've found ourselves teaching in the world as well, is how important practice is here. Because one of the things I notice is with this crazy driving to swimming, the Obama family thing that was going on, is that after the initial moment of crazy comparison, what's going on for me is living in the midst of comparison in an ongoing way that's so hard to see. It's the thing that goes into the background that becomes transparent. So now I'm in the world in a kind of comparison orientation that's become the air that I'm breathing. I can't even see it, and it's shaping everything. And of course it leads to all the other things that Matt Haig writes about regret of the past and self-judgment about choices I've made, all of that. So in order to be able to do what he so fiercely and lovingly says, which is don't compare yourself to other people, the first thing that we have to be able to do is to see that we're comparing ourselves to other people. I can't stop it until I can see that that's what I'm doing. And that's no easy thing, mostly because of the way it goes, things go into the background for us. Become invisible. And so I am, as you were talking, found myself appreciative in my own life of the encouragement I've had from people around me to take up practices that will have me sitting meditation practice that has become very important to me, of sitting quietly for a while and seeing what arises and being able to name it. Oh, there's comparison. Oh, there's self-criticism. Oh, there's fear. Because the more I do that, the more chance I have of knowing what this something that comparison is like. That's the first thing. And the second thing that I think has helped me this week with being very playful with it has been starting to consciously and purposefully pay attention to this topic of comparison. Like, I'm not, like you said, it's not enough to say, oh, well, I won't compare myself. It's not that. And that's why Matt, I think, has to say it 7 times. Because it's going to keep on happening. And so the act of stopping and reflecting and looking back and actually paying attention to where have I got caught in this, and being able to give it some detail and some realness, is part of the path to being able to notice it more when it's happening. And I suspect I have a lifetime. I mean, there's this thing that's so lovely about what he's writing is he starts to point out all the crazy ways that we compare ourselves. So to compare myself with a future self or with a past self or with the person I might have been had I done something different at that moment in time is effectively to compare myself with another person. Mm-hmm. It's another imaginary person, just like I'm comparing myself with the imaginary Obamas, who are not exactly the same as the person I'm listening to on the radio. So I think what I'm wanting to do in saying all of this is recognize at the same time that this is hard for us because of the way that you're saying we find ourselves out to lunch, and that the act of return is available to us all the time, and also it's a lifetime's work to be somebody who can return. I thought you said it beautifully, that life is always here waiting for us. True. But can take a lot of support and a lot of discipline to be someone who can return to life from the midst of not even knowing you've gone a long way away.
I notice as well, as you say, what helps you, Justin, I'm reflecting on the same thing for myself and realizing that humans are really important for me to be able to appreciate and receive my life. And that somehow I find the people with whom I have relationship are there to be appreciated. And when I appreciate them, I get to receive my life in my own being. And so I think the discipline or the practice that I have been doing is learning to let go of other things I might be up to in favor of appreciation. And as I appreciate people's goodness and people's being there in my life, and I vulnerably step into relationship more and ask for contact, it seems to be the gateway that allows me to be in receipt of my life. And I have to say, in this moment, it feels really supportive to be in this conversation in the run-up to what is a season that typically is fraught with relationship matters of families getting together. And in my world anyway, I know it's different for you with the Jewish calendar, but we have so many family events that happen. And I know lots of people do, where it's like you walk through the front door and all the dynamics spring up again. And it's so possible to go down the road of having various conflicts because of our opinions of how things should and shouldn't be and how things have been organized and who's there and what everyone does and what everyone eats and whatever. And I know I found it where there are years where it's been really hard to receive the fact we're all not working, we've got holiday, we've got time to spend together. And frequently I've been left kind of bereft of, oh, this was all supposed to be amazing and actually it was a wrangle and I'm exhausted. And the switch for me is through appreciation and not comparing, and those things, I think, being kind of two sides of the same coin. Because I think appreciation is the lightness of empathy, of connection. And I think comparison is like the dark side of it. And I think it always begins in the right place. But it is a discipline to stay in inquiring as to what's here. Inquiring as to into what's in this moment and what I can feel and see. And through connecting with other people, really and vulnerably, that channel for me to receive my life seems to open, and I can feel and I can be in receipt of the gifts that might be here through the people that are here, through the trees that are here, through the light that is here, through what the autumn colors look like, through what it feels like to be snuggled by my niece at the front door, and to not take those things for granted unconsciously, but actually turn towards them fully, so that I'm in receipt, and it's like it's the thing that fills me up so that I can be happy for other people without feeling terrible about myself. So I think accepting where I am is to do with appreciating where I am and finding the goodness of where I am and having that be my orientation to life, rather than finding the holes in things and seeking to pick something apart for its imperfection, but appreciate it. Feels like the way that I can genuinely be happy for myself and other people is because I'm filled with something. I'm filled with my life, and therefore I'm not looking to jump into anyone else's or need anything that's not given already.
There's something amazing implied in what you're saying, Lizzie, which is the extension of what Matt Haig is writing about, which I think would go something like this. Don't compare other people to other people. So one of the things that struck me is, as you were speaking, was, there are some beautiful, you talked about trees. So there are some beautiful trees on Hampstead Heath near where I live. And it's such a thing to go and to receive the beauty of a tree. And one of the things I notice with the trees is I don't think I've ever stood by a big oak or a big plane tree or a big, something and gone, oh, I wish you were a different kind of tree. It would be so much nicer if you were taller or if you were wider or if you were a different color. That doesn't come in. I get to just be still with it and really appreciate it for its own goodness. And yet with other people, so I think it's so easy to do with other people the same thing that we do with ourselves, which is, yeah, I could be with you, Lizzie, if only you didn't talk so much, or I could be with you if only you didn't keep on reminding me of how unsuccessful I am, or I would be with you if your presence didn't have me feel ashamed, or I could be with you if you just ate more nicely, or I could be, you know, all of this stuff that, or I could be with you, Lizzie, if you were more like somebody else. All of this that we do, which is the same thing we do with ourselves, because it's really the same phenomenon. And it seemed to me whilst you were talking that the move to welcome and be with our own lives and be filled with our own lives is the same as the move that allows us to be with other people, even though there may be things that they do that we wish they would do differently and requests we want to make and all of that. I'm not cutting that part off. But what happens when we can welcome the life that is other people for its own goodness? Is again the path out of this way that we make ourselves crazy by comparing all the time with what's not and what could be.
Yeah, and as you're speaking, I'm feeling this whole thing of, it feels like a matter of deepening. Like if I can deepen and widen my presence into this moment, into what's here, I come off this kind of horizontal, you know, referencing things outside of me, over there, out there, in the future, behind me. This is probably my spatial thing in myself happening here. And if I then take that horizontalness and imagine that it turns into some kind of verticalness, some kind of deepening in my body, feeling the ground, observing more clearly what's here, both in my sensations and my feelings and in my surroundings and in the human beings, and seeing to the depth of people, not the surface activity that they're up to, but something deeper, a whole different world opens up. And so to appreciate in that way feels like something different happens. And so it might mean limiting my exposure to the media. It might mean not listening to certain things so much or looking at certain things so much, and just allowing myself a kind of detox or something to say, how can I live here? You know, my wonderful friend Sue the other day, she's much, much older than me. And so she lives on her own, and she's got these wonderful, less current practices. So, you know, she's just got an iPhone and she's got no idea how to work it. And she's so excited that somebody might show her one day, but for now it's going to stay in the box kind of thing. But everyone's told her she has to do it, so she's done it. She's very, very open-minded, wonderful person. And she said, I have all my pictures up down the hallway. And every day I stand there and I look at them and I enjoy them so much. She said, I've got one of you with the two children, and I stand there and I smile and I laugh because I remember the moment that the photo was taken. And they're things that, for most of us in our houses, whatever's on the wall has gone into the background long ago. And that depth of presence to our current habitual surroundings is so inspiring to me. And I feel like that's what I want to cultivate more and more, is how do I really appreciate what's here and not fly into another world through my mobile phone, or not fly into imagining something else, or over listening to the news or the radio or whatever. So I'm going to take this and have a practice on this Sunday, and we have a family day today. We're doing Christmas wreath making and picking cones from the floor and making fire lighters for our family's children's school. So I'm going to practice this and genuinely feel grateful for being in receipt of this in this moment, and seeing what gifts it can keep giving me through the day.
How about that, where we've landed at this moment where it's time for us to stop on what it is to practice depth of contact with our own lives and with the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the last thing I would say is I want to retitle Matt Haig's chapter and change the word happiness to joy, because happiness is wonderful. And it seems to me that there's a bigger, wider, deeper, more expansive word that we need for that includes those moments of great delight, but also can include standing in the hallway,
mm-hmm.
maybe not feeling happy, but feeling a deep, deep, deep appreciation or welcoming our families. And happiness isn't the uppermost mood, but deeper than that, alongside whatever's going on top is a the, oh my goodness, what a thing it is to be here and be conscious in the world and have others when we can find that, or even just to have myself. So thank you, Lizzie, and thank you, everyone. It's such a treat to be able to do this. And we will be back next Sunday, same time, for episode 61. And we'll see you then.
Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.